Good evening. We have a very good number here this evening. We're very glad that you're here and hope and pray that all the things that we'll do tonight will be of great benefit to you, will uplift you, will encourage you, and will hopefully deepen your faith in God. That's what we're intending to do this evening, is to encourage one another and to worship Him as He directs us to. In Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 23, the wise man said, "Buy truth and do not sell it. Buy wisdom, instruction, and understanding." This morning, Chris was talking about the value of a person's soul. And he talked about the need for us to understand that the soul is the most valuable thing that we have in this life. And it's valuable because of who gave it to us. It's valuable because of how long it will last, because it's the only part that we have, the only thing that we have in this life that will go on after this life. It's the only part that's eternal. And so he talked to us about what would we give in exchange for our soul. And hopefully those of us who are here will understand that there is nothing on this earth that we should ever give in exchange for our soul. Well, this evening we're going to talk about something else that we should consider very valuable in our lives. The wise man there says, he says, "Buy truth and do not sell it. Buy wisdom, instruction, understanding." All of those things are associated with truth. Buy truth and do not sell it. What's the importance of truth? Why is it that truth would be something that we should hold in high regard? Well, first, truth is something that's associated with the character of God. There are certain things that just go right down to the very core of who God is. Love, right? When we think about God, we obviously think about love. When we think about mercy, when we think about kindness, when we think about justice. But truth is another one of those things that when you talk about His core being who God really is, truth has got to be part of it. He is truth. He cannot lie. There is nothing that He says that will ever change. See, that's part of what being truth is it's factual. It doesn't change no matter what. It's true. And that's what God is. He is true. We can't expect to have a relationship without truth. Our relationship with God is based upon the fact that we have truth in it. You see what the psalmist writes to us over in Psalm 145 and verse 17. "The Lord is righteous in all His ways and kind in all His works. The Lord is near to all who call on Him, to all who call on Him in truth." In order for us to have a relationship with God, we must call on Him, but we must call on Him in truth. We worship God in spirit and in truth, right? God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and in truth. So without truth, we can't worship Him. Without truth, we can't call on Him. Without truth, we can't hope to have freedom. You see, we could stop and do a whole lesson on all the things that truth does for us. Truth frees us, John 8, verse 32, right? "You shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free." The truth purifies us. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 22 and 23. The truth sanctifies us. John chapter 17 and verse 17. Look at all the things that truth does. It protects us, right? It's part of our armor as a Christian. We put around ourselves the belt of truth, or we gird our waist with truth. Truth will judge us on the last day. John chapter 12 and verse 48, it's the words of God, the words of Christ, truth that will judge us. So if truth is that important, if truth is that valuable to us, how should we act with regard to truth? Well, I want to tell you, there's a good example over in the Old Testament that we're going to look at this evening to help us to understand that people in general will look at truth and they'll react in different ways. And that example is found over in the book of 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 22. Last week, as it happens, we talked about 1 Kings chapter 21. So there's really not that much of a surprise that we might talk about 1 Kings chapter 22 this evening. Last week, we talked about King Ahab and Jezebel. And we talked about the atrocious acts that they did to Naboth and his family. All the sins that were associated with that particular event and the life of Naboth and Ahab and Jezebel, how that their inordinate desire, their greedy desire for his vineyard, led to things such as lying, led to things such as bad counsel, led to things all the way down to murder. And how we understand then by looking at that example, how that sin can take us much further than we ever wanted to go and get involved in many things that we never intended. But here in chapter 22, we have another example from the life of Ahab that will help us. You see, they've been there for now about 3 years. They've been living in peace, the nation of Israel. Because about 3 years prior to this particular chapter, Ahab had some battles with the king of Syria. Ben-Hadad, I believe, was his name. The king of Syria came down, and when he came down, he had a huge army with him. So huge, this is found in the couple of chapters before that, chapters 19 and 20. So huge that Ahab wasn't even going to attempt to fight him. The king sent him and said, I'm going to take all of your riches, I'm going to take your silver, your gold, your children, your wives, all that. And he said, fine, take it. I accept your terms. He wasn't even going to try. Because he knew that he had no chance. Well, then the king of Syria sent it back. Since he didn't get any argument from that, he thought, well, I didn't ask for enough, so I'll send him back again. He said, no, instead of that, I'm going to send my officers in, and we're going to go through your palace and everything, and everything that you like, we're taking it. And he said, well, okay, that's too far. He talked to the elders, and the elders said, yeah, that's too far. And God looked down and said that was too far. And God sent a prophet to Ahab and said, I'm going to show you that I have power over other nations. And so I'm going to take care of this. And God did. I'm obviously paraphrasing and moving through that very quickly so we can get to ours. But God took care of it. And the king of Syria ran away. But he came back. He came back because his counselors told him, well, their God, the Israelites' God, is a God of the hills. You remember that? He's a God of the hills. And if we attack them in the plains, in the valleys, we'll beat them then. And so come the next year, he comes back with his great horde of people. And Israel goes out to battle against them. It said like two small camps of goats compared to them. And God said, no, I'm going to prove it to them again. This time I'm proving to them, to the Syrians, to understand that I'm not a God of the hills, I am God. So God took care of him again. And Ahab was victorious of nothing he did on his own. But Ahab made a problem there, and he let the king go when God didn't want to let him go. And so God, he rebuked him for that. But now 3 years later, 3 years later, we have Ahab and Jezebel and the nation of Israel. They've been enjoying peace and prosperity a little bit for about 3 years now. And now they've also made an alliance with Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat is the king over Judah. Jehoshaphat was the son of Asa, a good king. And Jehoshaphat was also a good king. He obeyed God. He wouldn't follow after idols. But Jehoshaphat made a mistake in that he made an alliance with King Ahab. And that alliance was a marriage of their children. And if you remember the history of the king of Judah, after that, that caused Judah to go down rather rapidly for a while. But nonetheless, they've enjoyed prosperity. And Jehoshaphat comes to visit Ahab. And when he comes to visit, Ahab begins to say, you know what? This is over in 1 Kings chapter 22. He says, Syria still has control over Ramoth-Gilead. Now, Ramoth-Gilead is a city on the eastern side of the Jordan River. As part of what was originally the tribe of Manasseh. Remember, Manasseh was the tribe that had half of their inheritance on the east side and half of it on the west side. Well, this was on the east side. And Ramoth-Gilead, you might say, well, what's so special about that particular city? Well, it was actually probably the last city in the area around Israel, in the property of Israel, on the King's Highway. So it was the last one if you were going out, and the first one that you were coming in on what we would call, how about we say it was right there on the prime interstate. Okay? And so what they would do on that King's Highway is, as people, traders would come through, they would charge them a toll, they would charge them a tax. And so it was quite a money-making thing, right? You needed that city to increase your revenue. And so Ahab was saying, that was our city, and Syria never gave it back to us. So he said, Jehoshaphat, will you go with me to retake the city of Ramoth-Gilead? Jehoshaphat said, I am as you are. My horses as your horses. He said, yes, I'll go. But, he said, before we go, let's inquire of the Lord and see what he has to say. So Ahab gathers up 400 prophets and brings them in before the two kings. And they say, shall we go out to battle at Ramoth-Gilead? And they all said, yes, yes, you should go. The Lord will give it into your hands. One of the prophets, Zedekiah, I believe who it was, he brought in some horns. He said, with these horns, you'll be able to drive them out. You're going to win. It's yours. 400 prophets. But Jehoshaphat looked out and realized, there's 400 prophets out here, but none of them are prophets of the Lord. He says, is there no one else, a prophet of the Lord, that we can ask? Ahab says, well, there's one other guy. There's one other guy, Micaiah. But I don't like asking him. You can just hear Ahab say, I don't like asking him because he never prophesies anything good concerning me, only evil. Only evil. And Jehoshaphat says, well, surely not. Surely not. But he insisted, we need to ask a prophet of the Lord. And so while they send out a messenger to go get Micaiah to bring him, all the other prophets are before them. Oh, you should go. You're going to win. It's all yours. And they go out, and the messenger goes and gets Micaiah. And when he goes to get Micaiah, he tries to kind of prime him. I don't know if most of you young kids probably don't know what I mean by priming him. But we had a pump, a well, when I was growing up. And if the well kind of went dry, you'd have to prime it a little bit to get it going again, right? And so he was trying to prime him to get him going the direction that he wanted him to go. And so he said, all the other prophets are saying that the king should go and fight against Ramoth-Gilead and that they're going to win. So why don't you say that same thing? And Micaiah said, I'll say whatever the Lord tells me to say. And so they go. And when Micaiah comes in to Ahab, Ahab and Jehoshaphat are sitting there on their thrones and all the other people before him. And Ahab says, shall we go up to Ramoth-Gilead? Shall we go up to battle against them? And Micaiah looks at him and says, yes, go up. You'll win. Now you can just picture Ahab, right? Ahab's just told Jehoshaphat, I don't like sending for that guy. He never prophesies anything good concerning me, only evil all the time. And I just asked him, said, go up, you'll win. And so he goes, wait a minute. How many times do I have to ask you to make sure that you're telling me the truth? See, he didn't believe it. Whether it was by the way that he said it, have you ever used sarcasm in your life? I very rarely use sarcasm around. As you guys know, sarcasm is just not part of my repertoire, which is not true because I'm using it right now. But, you know, he could understand that something was not right. And so I want you to notice when he said that again, how many times shall I have to ask you before you'll tell me the truth? Notice what he says. This is over in 1 Kings chapter 22 and beginning down in verse 17. I saw all Israel, Micaiah says, scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let each return to his home in peace. Now, if you're not familiar with what he's talking about there, he's basically saying that the people of Israel have no leaders. Well, who is he talking to? He's talking to the king of Israel. So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, verse 18, did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me but evil? See, I told you. If we brought him in here, he wasn't going to say anything good concerning me. So Micaiah continues, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? And one said one thing and another said another. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord saying, I will entice him. And the Lord said to him, by what means? And he said, I will go out and will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. Notice, in the mouth of all his prophets. And he said, you are to entice him and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Now, therefore, behold, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets. The Lord has declared disaster for you. He said, what happened is that the Lord knows that you've lost, what's the word I'm looking for? You've deserted him, totally. You've gone away from him. And he's declared disaster for you. And the way that he's done it is by sending your prophets before you, and they are lying to you about that you're going to win. So Ahab doesn't take the news too good. And he tells his people to take Micaiah back and basically put him in prison and give him meager rations, bread and water, we might say, until he comes back. And Micaiah says, if you come back, then the Lord didn't send me. So they go out to battle. And in battle, Ahab tells Jehoshaphat, and this is one of those stories that when I'm reading it and I'm listening to it and I hear what Ahab tells Jehoshaphat, I go, why did Jehoshaphat agree to this? But this is what he said. He said, Jehoshaphat, we're going out to battle. I'm not going to present myself as the king, but you go ahead and dress up like you're a king. And that's what happened. You know, that would automatically raise a flag in my head. I don't know about you guys, but when the king says, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to conceal myself, but you go ahead and present yourself. That would go ding, 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 ding. Something doesn't sound right here. But that's what they do. And in the battle, the Syrians had told their armies, they said, you go after the king of Israel. You fight him, and you find him. Well, when they went out, at first they thought it was Jehoshaphat because he was the one dressed like a king. But when they started after him, he screamed out, he cried out to God, and God helped deliver him. And they figured out that he wasn't the king of Israel. So they turned away. And it says there that an archer randomly took and struck his bow, and he struck his arrow out, and it hit King Ahab. And shorten it down real quick, it killed him. So Ahab died, just as God said he would through Micaiah. Now, that's the event. That's what happened to King Ahab. And you say, but you said we were going to start off talking about truth and the value of truth and how people react to the truth. So how is it that we can learn from this story the value of having the correct attitude toward truth? Well, I'm going to tell you that there were four reactions to truth in this particular account. The first one was by Ahab. Notice what Ahab said when Jehoshaphat said, is there not someone, a prophet of the Lord that we can inquire of? Remember what he said? He said, well, there's one more, Micaiah, but I don't like talking to him because he never prophesies good concerning me, only evil. Only evil. Micaiah was not one that he called on regularly, was he? You know, in our day of smartphones and all that kind of stuff, he wasn't on the speed dial list, was he, right? On the friends and family or whatever. I don't have all that stuff. I just, you know, I got like three names that I call, and that's the only three names that I call. So I just look at recent, and that's it. All I got to do is look for recent, right? And so, but, you know, he wasn't on the speed dial list because he didn't want to hear from him. He didn't want to hear what Micaiah had to say because he never thought that he gave him anything good, and it's because Ahab was never doing anything good. Remember, Ahab and Jezebel caused Israel to do more evil, it says, than all who were before them. And they not only didn't want to hear from Micaiah, they went after every prophet of God. Remember a few chapters before, in chapter 17 and 18, they had killed all the prophets of God, according to Elijah. He thought that they had, at least, right? And then Elijah fought the prophets of Baal and Asherah on Mount Carmel, 400 of one and 450 of the other, and they tried to get rid of every prophet of God. They didn't want to hear the truth because they hated the truth. That was their attitude toward the truth. They hated it. They didn't want to hear from it. But you know what? They're not the only people that's ever been recorded in the Bible of those who hated the truth. Do you remember Pharaoh's reaction in the book of Exodus chapter 5 and in chapter 7? When Moses and Aaron came before them, and they said, the Lord God has said to let his people go, 3 days' journey into the wilderness so that they may offer up to them, offer up sacrifices to him. Remember what he said? Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? In chapter 7, God even said, even told Moses and Aaron, he says, he's stubborn. He's not going to listen to you. He's not going to listen to me. He doesn't want to hear it. What about the people of Judah over in 2 Chronicles chapter 24? In 2 Chronicles chapter 24, we have a record there of where we had a good king who was guided by a good priest. Jehoiada was the priest. And when the priest died, Jehoiada died, the people came in and they convinced the king to do wrong. Well, then Jehoiada's son, the priest's son, he rose up and told him, you're doing wrong. You know what they did to him? They stoned him. They killed him. Why? They hated to hear the truth. They didn't want to hear it. How about Stephen over in the book of Acts chapter 7, verses 51 through 57 or so. After he went through their history of the Israelite people, the Hebrews, and he gets down to verse 51 and he says, you're just like your fathers. You're stiff-necked and uncircumcised. You remember what they did to him? They ran at him, gnashed their teeth, took him out, outside. And then when he talked to him about what he saw, and he saw the heavens opening up, and God and Jesus on his right hand, they stopped their ears and ran upon him, and they stoned him and killed him. They didn't want to hear it. They hated hearing the truth. Even Jesus, over in John chapter 8, when he's talking there to the Jews at that particular time who were before him, he tells them in John chapter 8 and verse 39, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did, but now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. He says, you're wanting to kill me because you don't want to hear the truth. They hated it. Is it any different today? Aren't there people out there today that hate hearing the truth? They just don't want to listen to it. They don't want to talk about it. When you approach the subject about God or about the Bible, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to have nothing to do with it. Some get aggressive with it. They not only prevent them from being told the truth, they want to actively prevent anyone from hearing it. Just like Ahab and Jezebel were doing, right? We've been studying that in our books. The idea of pluralism and secularism in our society. People don't want to hear the truth, the one truth. They want their truth to be whatever it is for them. And therefore they hate truth, God. That's one attitude toward truth, and not the one we need to have. There was another attitude toward truth that was exhibited by the prophets, the false prophets. They didn't like the truth either, so much so that instead of just hating it, they just perverted it. They just twisted it, turned it to be whatever they wanted it to be. What is it that these false prophets told Ahab? Anything he wanted to hear. Whatever it is they thought that Ahab wanted to hear, that's what they were going to tell him. They changed the truth into a lie just to please the hearer and be profitable to themselves. We learned later, obviously, that that was part of God's plan, that he knew that he would listen to false prophets, to lies. Paul warned us of the same kind of problem, of false prophets who speak deceit and lying for their own gain. Over in the book of 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1, he says, now the Spirit expressly says that in latter times some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons through the insincerity of liars whose consciences are seared, who forbid marriage and require abstinence from foods that God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. He says they're in opposition to the truth. They pervert it. They're deceitful. They twist it. They turn it. He told him in 2 Timothy chapter 4, preach the word, verse 2, be ready in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with complete patience and teaching. For the time is coming, he says, when people will not endure sound teaching, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths. Itching ears. I talked to the young adult class about that a couple of weeks ago. The idea of what does it mean when it says itching ears? Well, what do you want to do when you have an itch? You want to scratch. Right? You just want to scratch. You want some kind of relief there, right? Something's got to be done there. And so the idea is you want to hear something and you keep going until somebody will tell you what you want to hear. That's what people will do, he says. But you, he says, you be ready to preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season. That is, preach it the same all the time. The message, the truth doesn't change, right? We need to be careful that we're not like a lot of religious groups. We must be on our guard. People will take some of the truth and pervert it in order to present a message that is pleasing to the ear of men. And it's easy to do that. It's easy to fall into that trap when we desire to hear it that way. You remember what he said over in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2? In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 11, therefore God sends them a strong delusion so that they may believe what is false, in order that all may be condemned who did not believe the truth. Now you'd stop there and say, God will send them a delusion and they'll believe what is false? But why? But had pleasure in unrighteousness. They wanted to hear what was unrighteous. They wanted to hear their own thing. And so God, after, as Chris talked about a few weeks ago in Romans chapter 1, after you get to a certain point where you've given up on God, finally God will say, okay, I've had enough. You've given up on me. And he'll allow you to do what you want to do. Some people hate the truth. Just don't want to have anything to do with it, like Ahab. Some people hate the truth enough to just twist it and pervert it and turn it to what they want to hear, like the false prophets did. Some people, and this is a dangerous one, by the way, some people want the truth to agree with them. You say, well, what's the difference there? I want you to consider Jehoshaphat for a second. I want you to think about the sequence of events. You see, sequence is important. What happens first is important, right? The first thing that happened was Ahab said, will you go with me, Jehoshaphat? Will you go with me in battle for Ramoth-Gilead? The second thing that happened was Jehoshaphat said, yes, I will go. Then the third thing that happened is, let's go ask God. Do you see something out of order there? You see, that third thing was out of order, wasn't it? But Jehoshaphat wanted to inquire of the Lord just so that he could see if the truth agreed with him. And I know that because even when Micaiah came, and even when Micaiah said that this is all because, you know, Ahab's going to die, he still went through with the plan, didn't he? He wasn't looking for the truth unless it agreed with him. As long as he said, let's find out, will the truth agree with me? Great. If it doesn't, well, I'm still going to do what I want to do anyway. Some people look at truth and they only want to find out, does it agree with them? But they're not looking to change. This isn't the only example in the Bible of those who were looking for the truth of God to agree with them. When you have a chance, either tonight or later on this week, go back and reread Jeremiah chapter 42 and 43. Because in those two particular chapters, some of the Jews come before Jeremiah and say, will you go ask God on our behalf what we should do? And whatever God says that we should do, that's what we'll do. And so he goes to him, and Jeremiah says, he said, God said, stay in the land. If you'll stay in the land, you don't have to worry about the king of Babylon. But don't leave. Don't go to Egypt. So Jeremiah went and told the people. God said, stay in the land. Don't go to Egypt. If you go to Egypt, it's not going to be good for you. And they said, oh, that's a lie. We're going to Egypt. They only wanted the truth if it was going to agree with what they wanted to do in the first place. That's not how we ought to be with truth. We need to be careful. I need to be careful. That we don't have the kind of idea that we've made up our mind of what we want to do. Now let's go find out if I can find something in the Bible that will justify it. Because friends, if you want to justify some kind of relationship in your life, you'll find a way to do it. No doubt about it. If you want to find something in the Bible that will help you to ease your conscience on something that you're wanting to do, you'll find a passage. You can twist it enough to say, There you go. But that's you wanting the truth to agree with you, not the other way around. And if all else fails on that one, we all, you know, we can always fall back to the, well, God didn't say I couldn't do it. That's a good way of saying I'm looking for something to agree with me. The final attitude, the fourth and final attitude toward truth in this particular account is that of Micaiah. And Micaiah said, I will tell you whatever God tells me to tell you. He was willing to tell Ahab, the king, the one in position of authority, the one who was in the position of being able to take his property, throw him into jail, take his life, and he was saying, I'm going to do what God tells me to, no matter the consequences. Being on the side of truth will always have consequences. Always. It may be from without, that is, the actions of others against us because of the truth that we're standing for. Light exposes darkness. Darkness doesn't like it. So there may be consequences associated with that. It may be from within. From within ourselves, when we're exposed to the truth, do we repent? Do we change our lives? Because our actions don't currently coincide with truth? See, if we want to be on the side of truth, we'll be willing to make that change. It all really boils down to Colossians 3 and verse 17. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do all or do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. There is great value in truth. The wise men said, buy truth and do not sell it. Get it, whatever you can, and don't sell it. And when we're faced with the truth, we can either hate it, that is, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to be bothered with it. I don't want to touch it. You can pervert it, twist it to say something that it doesn't say. You can try to find it only and agree with it only if it agrees with what you wanted to do in the first place, or you can stand with the truth and make changes in your life whenever you see that you need to make the changes. So the question is, which one are we? Which one are we? We need to always be evaluating our lives. 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, examining ourselves to make sure that we're in the faith. So if you're here this evening, you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, the truth that sits before you is that without Jesus, you couldn't have eternal salvation. And the truth also exists is that if you haven't obeyed him, you're still without it. So if you need to talk to us more about what that means and what it means to make that change in your life and to become a Christian, we'd love to do that. Maybe that you already know and you know you just haven't done everything you're supposed to yet. We'd be glad to help you in that. Maybe you are a Christian and you haven't been living the way that you should and the truth is now standing before you and you've got a choice to make. Am I going to follow the truth or am I going to pervert it and make it say what I want it to say? It's your only options. If there's any way that we can help you, we'd ask you to come while we stand and while we sing.